starts screaming, "Mother, the kitchen's on fire." And I says, "How can it be? I haven't got anything on."
She did not say the kitchen's on fire. She said the house is on fire.
Oh.
Okay. I didn't know where to
run. Yeah, stop me if I'm going to tell a lie. And it was flaming. And what I did was I picked up the pot and took it over. It was flaming. Put it in the sink. Well, the sink didn't have water in, but it had just enough water in for it to splash. And I knew it was going to. What I should have done was what?
Put a lid on it.
Or put a rug on it, or put something on it to smother it. But I put it in the sink, and it did splash. And when my husband came home, he was furious with me. He said, "You think more of your house than you do of me." I had to get rid of my wife. Anyway, I didn't feel any pain at all. I got burned, and you can see the scars on my arms and on my face. And I didn't feel one bit of pain until we were in the car on the way to the doctor's. And I guess the shock had kept me from feeling the pain. So be careful what you do when you have a fire. Okay, your turn. Yep.
This is my mom's dinner.
Oh dear.
Let's see, we'll start with Shirlene and Dan. We'll go down the list.
This was when Virginia was maybe about... Huh?
3 and a half.
She was 3 and a half years old. And when we first moved from Schenectady to Provo, we rented a house down near the steel mill. And we had been there for a little while. And somehow or other, Hal Garvey, and who was the other one? Anyway, there were two former Schenectadians came to visit us in this house. And we were sitting there eating something. And there was a pause, and what happened was that she said, "My dad's famous. He makes a lot of money." And the chair was a rickety chair, and it collapsed, and Hal Garvey went on the floor.
We all were laughing so hard. Okay.
Well, it was true.
The only thing that came to mind was a sad story, and I don't want to damper this thing right away. Does someone else want to tell some funny ones or something first?
I'm trying to get out of here.
What came to my mind was when there was the hole in the rock accident. I was just vaguely aware. I was home. I was just vaguely aware even that they'd gone. And the week before, we had gone up to Ogden to visit my cousins, Randy and Alan, and their family, and we had invited them to come on this Hole in the Rock scouting trip with my brothers, and Dad was going to be the chaplain of it, and you all know the rest of the story, but I just remember that in the middle of the night, all know the story? Okay. Well, what happened was our whole scout trip, it was our whole Deacon's Quorum. What was it, 12 young men from our ward? And
it was a steak trip.
And some of the scout leaders, my boss at work, I was the secretary to the German department, or to the language department, and my boss went along on it, and he was killed. What happened was they got near the hole in the rock, and they were all in the back of a big truck, and the brakes went out, the truck went over the cliff, rolled over, threw my brother Tracy Jr. over the one side, and if I've got this story straight, what happened with David was David flipped out of the truck too, and the truck fell right on top of David, but David was in a little gully under the truck, and so the truck, he survived it, but just inches away from him, our cousin Randy was killed. And how many boys died? There were 12 deaths. Just in our ward.
Total deaths in the accident were 13.
Okay, the total deaths in the accident were 13. And the man, Dad woke up with the flu that morning that they left. And the man who took...
Well, he had it all week.
Oh, had he had it all week?
He couldn't get better.
Anyway, he couldn't get better, and the man who, Chase Allred, took Dad's place as the chaplain on the trip, and he was severely injured as well. Well, I just remember that Dad came to me, and he didn't want, Dad was in the bishopric at the time, and he didn't want Mom to be all upset and alarmed, and he didn't want, they had already received word that there was a serious accident, but they didn't know who was killed, who survived, what happened, and so the bishopric was going to go out in the middle of the desert to find out what happened. And Dad just came to me and very quietly said, "Charlene, I don't want your mother to be alone through this. I want you to stick by Ida Rose, and you be with her every minute, because we don't know what kind of information we're going to have to bring back about this. And you just stick with your mother."
Why don't you, Tracy Jr., why don't you tell a little bit more about it?
Yeah, they ought to be the ones to tell them. But let me tell the rest about Mom, and then I'll sit down. I'll let them. Yeah, they're the ones who should be telling this. But I just remember Mom's faith. After a while, we started hearing the accounts, and it got really scary because the radio got news of it. So we were listening to the news, and it just seemed like every report was worse. First of all, we heard that everybody was killed. Then we heard, no, they were severely injured, but the ones who were injured were so severely injured. And so, you know, we didn't know what to think. Do we want them to be suffering? How do we know they're not maimed for life? What do you wish for? What do you pray for? What do you hope for? And I can remember Mom and I deciding that we really needed to go pray about this. And so we went in the back room, and we knelt down, and we prayed. And Mom didn't pray that our boys would be okay, because she didn't know how severely hurt they were. You know, she just prayed that the Lord's will would be done, and that what was best for everybody would happen, and that we would be able to accept whatever happened and to help those who were involved. And then when we got up from the prayer, Mom just looked at me and gave me a big hug and said, "You're going to think that I just don't think bad things can happen to us, but I know my boys are all right. So don't you worry, Charlene, because our boys are all right." And I just thought to myself, boy, I really hope she's all right. She knows this. You know, I didn't know if I dared be happy or comforted or not, because I didn't know if I dared believe her. But I just couldn't believe her face. She just had this absolute assurance that seemed to come through the Spirit that her boys were all right. And it was very comforting to me, and gave me a lot of faith in my own mother's faith. Okay, Tracy.
We didn't know for hours.
We were up all night long.
We didn't know until
the most terrible night of my life.
I think it was about 12 o'clock at night. This is the accident happened in the afternoon. And we didn't know until 12 or maybe even later. I forget exactly when.
David called.
Or maybe it was Tracy who called. Here, you
Yeah, I was president of the Explorer Post, and our post was, I had just graduated from high school, and our post was the organizing unit, but we couldn't get enough people from our group to fill the quota for the Sakatwa tour group that organized the float trip. We were going to go down the Colorado River the last year before Glen Canyon Dam filled. So, it was a terrible, tragic accident. One moment we were all gaiety and singing, and then somebody hollered, "He's losing the brakes, jump," and those who could jumped, and those who couldn't. And it was one of those life-changing events when you wonder, why was I allowed to live and why was someone else taken? And there were 7 boys from our ward who died. Yeah. But it was really a sobering experience. It was 1963, June what, David?
Weren't they driving you around?
Well, my job, everybody was in shock, but my job was to take down an accurate list of the dead and injured. It was 3 hours before the first help came. A couple of boys took off down the road who weren't hurt, and they finally found a farmer who drove them into town to report the accident. So it was hours before help came. It was out in the middle of nowhere. But I can remember Lee Calden sitting there with his leg hanging on by a tendon, his foot hanging on by a tendon, and asking my buddy Lee his name. Because that was my mental state. I didn't recognize my own friends' names, you know. So it was a very sober. I'll give you another experience now. I don't know why David is so enamored with drilling, because I was the first driller in the family. when we lived in Orem, that same year that Virginia told her funny one, Orem is on the lake shore of Lake Bonneville, and it's all sand, deep sand. It's really fun to play in. And one day I got the garden hose. And you know how if you run the hose full, you can poke it down in the dirt and make a dig? And I put the whole hose down into the sand. The whole hose. And then it got stuck. And I don't remember what Dad did. I don't remember any severe punishment or anything, but the hose is still there in Orem.
When I was growing up, I used to go down to my grandfather, grandmother Bartholomew's in Fayette, Utah, down south of Manti, although a slightly different route, down in San Pete County. And it was when I'd be out there chomping hay or hoeing potatoes or helping mend fences as just a little kid. It seemed like it was pretty hot there and dry country, and it was always great when we stopped on the way back from being out on the bench and the west bench or out on the east bench to stop at the little country store not far from my grandparents' home. And once in a while my grandpa would stop there and buy me a soda pop. That was a big deal for me then. My grandpa Bartholomew seemed like sort of a gruff person, and I think I had a little bit of fear of him as well as respect. So usually I'd be down there for a couple of weeks at a time, a few weeks during the summer. One summer I was down there for a couple of months maybe, a longer period of time. And I think that was the summer he had me work for a number of weeks on a potato field that he was farming, probably on shares with a widow there in town. And I think that was the first summer I had had my own responsibility to weed a whole potato patch, a fairly large one. I can't remember whether it was 1 or 2 or 3 acres or what. But anyway, I had worked pretty hard that summer. And I still thought of my grandfather as being pretty rough, but when he brought me, not rough, but just sort of gruff, and you know, a little bit of fear as well as respect. And when we came home, when he brought me home that summer, he made out a check for $25 to me, and so this was something I had never expected, totally unexpected, and I think it. Later on, I got a lot different view of my grandfather and realized what a good person he was and what a soft-hearted person he was. Really some impressive examples of things that happened later on, but that one was one that warmed my heart and made me feel like I was valued and loved and appreciated. Not the money itself, but even though it seemed like a fortune to me at the time, but just the unexpected receipt of this kind of acknowledgement by my grandfather.
You sell the money?
I don't remember what I did.
David, you're up.
Turning it off.
It's even recording.
I've got to ask Shalina's because I'm not sure, but didn't you get baptized in Susquehanna, or so that's the first memory I have. I probably was 3 years old then, but I remember the old black cars and all out on this grassy place, and I remember her being baptized in the Susquehanna River. So later when I was 8, that's the view of, I thought that's how you got baptized, was in a river. And then, lo and behold, I got baptized in a font. I was one of the first, in fact, may have been the first to get baptized in this Schenectady font.
I got baptized there too.
You were there too? Well, that's then for sure that what I remember was Shirlene's baptism. But I remember it as a real spiritual experience that early, and it was something I can always go back to remember.
The neat thing about that baptism was I was so thrilled that I was totally without sin. I made up my mind that I wouldn't speak again, and that way I couldn't sin. So for a whole day, I didn't say a word. It's too bad you couldn't have all been there to see the miracle.
It's not too late, Shirley.
Well, one nice thing about being the spouse here, I can tell you anything I want about my childhood and no one can correct me, right? One of my happiest memories was back when I was young. For 3 years I lived in Japan, from the time I was 7 until I was 10. And I can still remember coming back from Japan with my family. It took us 10 days to get across the Pacific Ocean from Japan to San Francisco. I can still vividly remember being on that ship and going under the Golden Gate Bridge and then docking. But the most exciting moment for me was coming down the gangplank with my family and putting my foot on American soil. I was only 10 years old, and it surprised me. If I had not been so self-conscious, I truly would have knelt down and kissed the ground.
Okay, Liz?
Right here? Seeing that picture of Grandma Langford and Grandpa Langford's home in Ogden brought back a lot of memories of when I was a child and visiting Grandma in Ogden. I always thought that was really fun. It seems like Mother sent me up there a lot during the summer for a week at a time to stay with Grandma. And I think Grandmother Langford thought I was a lazy girl or something because she took it upon herself to teach me how to work.
I'm sure she did.
But I just remember she had this iron, one of those rotating, long, kind of a cleaner type, like what the cleaners have, and she made me iron the sheets. I had to iron grandmother and grandfather's sheets and pillowcases. I'd fold them in quarters and feed them through this machine. Grandma was a real stickler. If they weren't right, I'd had to have to do them again. And
it's called a mangle. A mangle.
It is a mangle? That's what it's called? Oh. But I remember it was down in the basement. I always had this really creepy feeling about grandmother's basement. It really gave me the creeps, and I had to go down there all by myself and sit at this iron and iron these sheets. And I think part of the reason I had a really bad feeling about the basement was that when we were up there as a family, sometimes we'd sleep down there. And I just remember some long room, kind of cement walls and stuff. It was very dark and cold, and we'd sleep on these cots or something down there. And I remember we were sleeping down there one night, and I think David and Tracy and some other cousins or something took it upon themselves to scare the bejeebers out of us. I mean, and so, you know, we were laying there half asleep, and I don't remember exactly what they did, but, you know, they popped in on us all of a sudden and yelled and screamed or something, and I was always a real scary kind anyway, but I just remember after that I just never wanted to go down there. Anyway, I have wonderful feelings about Grandmother Langford and being at her house, drinking mossy water out of that fountain that came up out of the ground in the backyard. And I remember her getting really mad at us once because we were playing hide and seek and tossing hydrangea blossoms at each other. You know, she had that, or maybe it was snowball. You know, those white snowball bushes. You know, we denuded her tree once and really made her mad because we were tossing those at each other. Anyway, it was lots of fun to be at Grandma Langford's house.
Hey guys.
I want to talk about opera. No.
I was thinking about my most embarrassing moment. And I've had a lot of them, and all of them have been involved with members of the opposite sex. For me, growing up in an all-male family, except for a mother, of course, women were always a mystery. And I guess there's that book about men are from Mars and women are for some other galaxy or something. That's how it seemed like to me. I just didn't get it. And it's still a mystery. I dated very little in high school. Too afraid to ask a girl out. It was just a terrible thing. But my best friend and I decided as kind of a test of manhood that we would get dates for the junior prom. And I asked this girl who was so far above me that I was just shocked that she said yes. Joanna Leister. And so we were going to go to the junior prom. My best friend didn't get a date. But I couldn't drive. I didn't have a driver's license. So both of us took her. So this was already headed to the wrong direction. This was just a terrible deal. And I guess we took turns dancing or something, and I said, Ken, let's just get out of here. This is embarrassing. And but I had decided that I was going to try to do the goodnight kiss thing. And so I walked her up to the door, and I reached to grab her by the shoulders because I was going to kind of do this kind of a move. But what I had forgotten is that we had gone to get milkshakes before I took her home, and for some reason I had carried the milkshake to the door with me. So as I grabbed her to do this, I dumped the milkshake on her. And she looked at me like, you and she turned and walked in, and that was the end of Joanna. So.
Which button? Where?
We're glad you got rid of her.
That button. You have to keep it down or it stops.
See, I am the shortest in the family. I tend to measure my parenting skills by how I was raised and how I measure up. And I think of my upbringing as being structured and disciplined and organized. But I'm thinking about it more, I realized my parents gave a lot more latitude to myself and my siblings as children than I give to my own children. A few quick examples.
Well, the little kids got away with a lot.
Well, think about David building those crazy machines and Mom letting him actually go up in them, you know? I wouldn't allow that.
Ask her for reason.
Mom and Dad is flexible.
Right, you know? When I was in college, I had a class in bug collecting. I don't even remember what the class was called, but I had to take this class and collect all these bugs. But it was fall semester, and we had an early freeze, and there were no bugs. And my grade depended on me getting a collection together. So my parents took their Christmas vacation holiday time to go down to St. George with me and Charlotte, and I'm sure you went too, Nancy. And we all collected bugs for Christmas. And I got an A in class. I have one sad memory, which Mom may not even remember that I have as a memory, but one night, I was in the back bedroom, which my mother let me paint bright red. I would never let my children paint a room bright red. And she, it was Valentine's Day. Remember that picture with us in the red dresses and the white crisp aprons? Well, guess what? Mother was sewing on those, and she was back in the family room. I was down that bedroom. I woke during the night to hear someone crying, sobbing. And I got out of bed. I wasn't very old, remember that picture, and I walked down the hall, and Mother was sitting at the sewing machine crying.
It's my first memory of, I didn't know mothers cry. And she was working on my dress. And I felt terrible. And I remember putting my arms around her neck and telling her, it's okay. I bet she was crying because she didn't want to work on my dress. Go to bed, it's okay. You don't need to finish that dress. But when I woke up in the morning, that dress was hanging at the end of my bed. And I will always remember that.
Nothing funny happened to me growing up. You mean you're grown up? I've been told I have to do at least a confession now. I will tell you a confession. When I was about probably 8, I was not a big husky kid. Okay, I was, you know, I was okay. I could run maybe as fast as most kids or whatever, but I wasn't into beating up other kids, which was, I got beat up. I was once pounded into the ground in the Lewis's backyard, which was within sight of my own house. I don't know why my parents didn't come out and rescue me. Being pounded into this bloody pulp in the dirt. So that was good for me. I don't even know now who did it, but there were a lot of tough guys. Actually, you know, it might have been Jim Van Wyck's older brother. Sure. I'm going to think about it. Oh, this isn't something to laugh about. This kid killed his father. Okay, he actually took out a gun and murdered his own father. So I guess I got lucky. But in any event, yeah, I had some tough times, but. And I managed to stay alive through all this, and was not too aggressive. But one time I remember we were over at the Jefferson School playground. When I say we, I mean me and maybe 7 or 8 of my friends. And here came Peter Groot. Now, Peter Groot was the son of a very brilliant scientist with GE who had been at Schenectady and had come out to the Hanford Atomic Works to do something I know not what, of course. None of our fathers could talk about what they did. It was all government secrets. So we just knew that Peter Groot was very smart, and his father was very smart, and but we considered ourselves smart too, but he was especially smart because he was taking algebra in sixth grade, and he had to, I guess this must have been a little later. Anyway, he had to ride his bike, maybe in fifth grade, he had to ride his bike over to the junior high to get his algebra class, and he was just that much ahead of the rest of us. So anyway, here comes Peter Groot, and my buddy said, "Hey Barry, there's Peter. Even you could beat him up." Now, like I say, this is my most embarrassing moment in confession because I took the bait. As stupid as that sounds in retrospect, I actually went over there and I punched Peter for no reason at all, other than that, you know, this was to show that I was tougher than at least some kid in Jefferson Elementary School. Unfortunately, 2 weeks later, it was his birthday, and I got invited to his party. And I went, I felt like a complete heel the whole time. His mother made, he was born around Halloween, or maybe right on Halloween. His mother made this wonderful pumpkin cake, including the vine and everything, you know, the whole pumpkin. And I sat there and ate that cake. It was the cake of remorse. No, he's too embarrassed to apologize. If I could ever find him, I would apologize now.
Well, I have a lot of memories that have already been told. You know, the hole in the rock and the grandma's house up in Ogden. And Virginia mentioning how lenient Mom was with us. Even though she was strict and we had to practice our piano a certain amount of time and a certain time, she still gave us a lot of leeway, and especially with our room decorating. And after her red room, I got a green room. And she let me paint one wall white. And then my friends would come in, and with Kato pens, they would sign their names. And so that was a crazy room. And then we had those black bedspreads, those white and black bedspreads. Yeah. So we had a lot of fun with different things and decorating. And another memory I have of Dad is I always knew that he loved us. But when I was in the sixth grade, I was doing a hooked rug. And I wanted to finish it so I could enter it in
the state contest.
Was it a state contest of some sort? Yeah. So I really wanted to finish it by the deadline and get this turned in. And in order to do it, I had to go in early to school before anybody else was there except the teacher. And so Dad would drive me every morning before he went to work. He would take me in and drop me off, and we'd have little talks on the way. And I remember one morning he was really serious, and he just went on and on about he wanted to make sure that I was safe. And these are back long ago, but he, you know, wanted to make sure the teacher was being proper with me and was just wanted to make sure I was safe. And that just made such an impression on me that my dad really loved me and cared about me and wanted me to be safe.